is Monday, April 4th, and the time is 8:09 a.m. in the dedicated committee room. If you'll also say that, you can do that. Members present are behind Representative Matt Kropp, Representative Ron Gill, Co-Chair Representative Andy Story, and myself, Co-Chair Representative Harry Trump. Please silence your cell phone, turn off the bell, record the recording of your voting as a lawyer relevant, and do not have any desire to lay a lawyer or your assisting with Doug and Paul Hefford to support. Thank you both. We have a forum to conduct business. I'd like to recognize the presentation from Dr. Diane Hirschberg, Director of the Institute of Social and Economic Research at the University of Alaska, and the Ambassador's Report, School District Energy Cost in Alaska. We are also joined by Ken Derrick of Deed, who is online right now and available for questions, as well as Chris McConnell, Director of the Alaska Network for Energy Education and Employment at REAP, the Renewable Energy Alaska Project. This is part of a deeper conversation we promised to have around the possibility for efficiencies in our schools. And Dr. Hirschberg, good morning. How are you?
Good morning.
Of course, the primary answer is the first one on this.
to those communities that are islanded or not connected to the ground. They are reliant on diesel powered microgrids for energy, and most are reliant on diesel and oil for heat. Transportation of fuel in remote communities for energy is expensive, as is maintenance, especially for those communities where there are not local people who have the skills to maintain and repair energy systems. Some districts are more fortunate than others to have reliable or more affordable sources of energy nearby, and districts located on the railroad have much less expensive energy sources or options. Districts with access to reliable hydro resources also may enjoy less expensive power. Next slide, please. District costs for heating oil or diesel are subject to market forces, but also for remote communities that have limited windows for fuel delivery. These costs are generally determined through annual contracts, which are renegotiated each year. This means that if the price of oil drops mid-year, the district is not going to enjoy savings because they've already set the price for the year. On the other hand, if the price of oil increases, like we've seen this year, the district will benefit from not having to pay a higher price for some time. However, if the district underestimates fuel needs in a given year, their costs can become quite high because they have to purchase on the spot market at whatever the cost is that day, and they also have to pay much, much higher costs for the delivery of fuel. And this can happen for many reasons, as when another shift of energy is lost, such as when hydro was not an option in Southeast because of the drought, or when there was a leak, there is a leak in a storage tank, or perhaps a flood wipes out one of the tank pumps. Next slide, please. So I did note before that there isn't sufficient data to estimate savings generally in the state if we make an investment. But there was an attempt done about a decade ago when the Alaska Housing Finance Corporation did energy audits on 156 public schools, and the Cool Climate Housing Research Center worked with them to analyze the results. That was back in 2013. It was found that on average, schools could save about $33,300 per year on energy if they implemented cost-effective energy efficiency retrofits after audits were done. And the upfront cost was estimated at about $125,000. So you can see that's return on investment after about 4 years. However, there hasn't been a comprehensive list made of schools that have implemented these upgrades. So we try to understand who uses what energy is not that easy as they noted earlier. If we look at Alaska as a whole, about 50% of Alaska's unplanned and outstanding next slide, which is your local energy sources there. So about 50% of Alaska's energy is generated from natural gas. This source of energy is limited to communities either on the railroad or with their own natural gas resources and facilities nearby, like up in the Keokuk. So in 2018, hydroelectric power generated nearly 27% of the state's electricity, which was the highest that was on record. But then we had a prolonged drought in Southeast Alaska in 2019, and some communities had to turn to diesel generators for their electricity. And of course, with climate change impacts growing, threats to the reliability of hydropower are likely to continue. So the majority of communities that are off the grid and not near hydropower sources still rely on heating fuel or diesel for much of their heating. But there are several districts that have developed biomass plants for heating, and there are experiments around the state with heat pumps. And again, at present, there's no complete list of the energy sources used by schools in Alaska. There are communities that have wind turbines or hydropower for their primary source of electricity, so we can assume in those communities, that schools access at least some of their power to water sources. And we also know which schools use biomass as a heat source. And there isn't really good data on estimated cost savings from biomass, but we estimate that these systems displace about 351,000 gallons of heating fuel annually. Next slide, please. So energy is used for many different reasons in schools, but about 74% of that back in 2014 was estimated to be space heating. And then we've got a lot of revolution pans, refrigeration, cooking, burning, and so forth. And it's really hard, though, to make any generalizable statements about energy utilization in school buildings because there's so many factors that come into play. The size of the space that has to be heated, and even that's not easy to measure. We'll either be using square footage, which is our best available measure of school spaces, but that's only a proxy of the total space. Because height of space is how it's configured, also matter, as well as, of course, whether it is the energy efficient space or not. So a wing of a building might have the same square footage as a gymnasium, but the gym will be two or three stories tall and have much more open space to heat. And then we've got utilization. So school facilities, such as gyms and libraries, may be used many more hours a day than a regular classroom space. And I'm sure most of you, all of you know that rural communities, the gym is used for basketball after hours and on weekends. And doors are often left open during recreation time to let players in and out, and also to let air circulate, because even in the coldest months, those gyms get really, really hot and stuffy. Then you also have communities where lights might be left on outside. The school buildings, for security reasons, or help community members who need to be working or otherwise living about in a school area. So all of those factors contribute to heating and electricity use. And then you've got the age of the building, the quality of the construction, the condition of the building, and the maintenance of the building. Whether heating systems are regularly serviced, or whether there's good insulation around the windows, ceiling around door jams, or if the building has been retrofitted for energy efficiency. So again, we don't have very good data in the state to answer that, to build the whole picture, and really give you a comprehensive understanding of it. Next slide, please. What we do see is there's huge variation in how much districts spend on energy. And this is looking at FY19 budgets. The high was 10% in income tax, which of course is includes communities where it is regularly well, zero for weeks, maybe months on end. And the low was 19. But we've got what we know is that energy is a significant investment for at least close to 20 districts. And there's detail on this in our report. But we're going to show you how this compares in a second. So if you go to the next slide. To find general trends that are beyond just district by district analysis, we looked at annual energy costs from FY20, from 2005 to 2019 on a per square foot basis. We have all those caveats that you shared about the weaknesses of that measure. So school districts were grouped by access to the route system as well as by climate zone. And these climate zones come from the 2009 International Energy Conservation Views. So what those zones are supposed to do is help you match building energy efficiency codes with different climates. Next slide, please. So this slide has a lot going on. Solid lines represent overall costs. Dashed lines represent costs for school districts that are primarily on the route system. And dotted lines represent costs for school districts primarily off the road system. So the black line, the black circle line, is the cost across the state as a whole. And then we've got these different zones that I've taken on the map before. The green line shows the cost of school districts overall in climate zone 6, red line 7, blue line 8 and 9. And the story that's presently is that school districts that are primarily off the road have much higher energy costs than those on the road system. Zone 6, which is southeast, is the exception. It's entirely off the road system, but the milder climate likely leads lower energy costs, and there's also a lot of hydro. Similarly, the harsher climate includes the wine, the orange, and of course, wine generally, but generally higher costs. And then you see that Zone 7 on the road system, Zone 7 overall, and statewide on the road system are all similar, which is likely due to the impact of Anchorage, which is such a large player in any market at low cost in the state. Next slide, please. And so I think these graphs are slow, but it just gives you a sense of how much energy costs vary by district. And likely they vary by school within the district because you've got districts with buildings that were built in the last decade or two decades and buildings that were built 150 years ago. What we did here was we split the districts that have higher costs per student and then upper graph for each of these zones and then lower overall. And next slide. And so,
yes, I can add this one time, which I like to say, there's no classic in China. Just a moment, I'm thinking.
Great. So I'm just going to wrap this up real quickly so there's time for questions. It's the slide up on energy cost per area in zone 8 and 9. That was just the next one for the final slide. But as we look at the data, it is important to remember that what it can tell, we need to remember what it can tell us and what it can't tell us. Most importantly, we don't know where we have inefficiencies. There are efforts underway to install energy monitoring equipment in schools across Alaska so that we can better understand energy use, but also hopefully engage young people in learning about energy, that they're excited about working in this field. There is also data that the Department of Education and Development is collecting for districts that are applying for retrofit funds. So this data may not provide comparable data on energy costs, but it is going to help the state understand energy use. But in order to tell the full picture of energy costs and usage, we do need more data that is happening in a consistent fashion. And as noted earlier, Alaska's climate and emotion are not something we can change, and not something we should change, but rather in order to address the high cost of energy, the state needs to look at those factors that are within its control. So that really is energy efficiency and renewable energy. But to estimate savings, again, we need far better data than is available. So I'm going to stop here and say next slide. And this just gives you a link to our brief. And of course, anybody that's interested is welcome to contact me. And I see that Meg Levin has also joined us, who is my co-author on this report, which is great because he can answer a lot more questions on some technical analyses. And with that, I'm going to hand it back to the committee chairs. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Dr. Hirschberg. Mr. Green, welcome. Do you have any comments you'd like to make before we go to questions?
Thank you, Dr. Drummond and the Chair. Thank you both for your work on this. I was wondering what you think there was a good system way to gather data. Could you elaborate on that before me so we can possibly know what we can do to make that possible?
Thank you. The people who work in schools are not necessarily the people who are going to be able to gather all of the data that is needed. I guess that's one of the challenges. I've heard some people say, well, we can just Minnesota survey of school districts, and school business officers did help us try to gather some information on primary heat sources, but it's not really straightforward. One, because some of the school districts, they're drawing energy from the community where they're not necessarily aware of all the energy sources from that community. So we've got to work with, as a partnership in data collection between communities and school buildings. But the other piece is looking at the facilities, doing the kinds of audits that are required. Chris McConnell, Tim, if he's on, they're going to be able to get much more specific information than I can on what goes into these audits. But they are going to be beyond what school district personnel are generally trained and prepared to do. So it would need to be some kind of a coordinated effort where people with expertise in energy audits are going out and looking at the facilities and being able to look at not just the square footage, but the energy usage in terms of space. And as I said, I think a lot of data is getting collected in a few places, but not systematically for every school building. We looked at the school buildings list that was shared with us, and there are buildings that we can't tell if they're actually being used or if they're being used what they're being used for. In some cases, I think there are buildings that are 70 and 80 years old that are probably just cold storage and not heated, but we have no way to tell.
That's fine. So I just wanted to say a little bit about, school districts' energy efficiency success. And that had to do with just what you're talking about. You need to have someone else do the work within the district on finding out energy uses and ways to save on lights, computer shutdowns, things like that. I can't remember how many years it was, but we contracted with Energy Star. Actually, if I remember that name correctly, but they were an organization that school business officials had heard about through some of the conferences that you go to, and their agency, and they're all over the United States. They contracted with the district to actually reinvest what the district has to make with about $100,000. For a staff person, and it was like a 3-year commitment, and then they ended up training a school district employee who still, to this day, works for the district. It's about 25% of that person's job now is on energy efficiencies because it makes a huge investment. And there was an article I just put up this morning in Page tomorrow on the public radio station how we saved $4 million over. Several years in just educating staff about ways to save energy with turning systems down, looking at lightings, changing lightings, things just to the buildings. But that four years of $100,000 to help that agency really helped spotlight what we can be doing to save money and have those great benefits for us. But I'm not sure. That's what you're talking about, just an assessment. It's something like that, which certainly paid dividends for the utility district, but they had to invest that $100,000 in school board after the committee to spend $100,000 for 3 years, and then they went away. We don't pay that as I'm going for a long time. Now they still consult with us for free. If you have a question, things like that. But I don't know if that's what you're talking about or if you're talking about something different.
I'm not familiar with that organization, so I'm not sure. Chris McConnell's maybe he's got more familiarity with that. I think one of the interesting challenges you talked about, having an employee who was trained and who is still there, and, that's the grant turnover, it's how to get community members to know the grant to that. But I think the other challenge I think about upfront investment is that small districts that are getting slammed with energy costs are probably trying to figure out how to meet the immediate energy costs and having the money for a longer term exploration of energy efficiencies probably gets from the back room where they try to figure out how to get into the air. And this is something we found back when the ICER was looking at the geographic cost differentials. We at one point had a conversation with legislators about whether energy costs need to be something separate from the other pieces of the school funding program, because what we found was there was this increase. It was like fuel costs went way up right after the revised geographic cost differential was implemented, and it meant that a bunch of districts who saw new revenue coming in and were ready to place their way to go to do something with it for teachers and students instead had to pay that money to our energy costs. That volatility really harms districts, you know, even when you as a funding authority are trying to give right thing in terms of making sure that everybody's getting the funding they need.
Dr. Hirschberg, this is Kirsten Cole. I'll just jump in.
This is Taylor Dragon. I think you put your name and affiliation on the record and I see your team screen button. How can you find them? Want to make a comment?
Sorry.
On the record, and go ahead with your comment.
Sure. My name is Chris Latone. I direct the Alaska Network of Energy Education and Employment at REAP, Renewable Energy Alaska Project.
Go ahead and catch up with your questions. Require your expertise.
I'm just checking in where Dr. Hirschberg and the previous testimony about the Juno efficiency project, and essentially that is an ESCO, an energy savings contract, that is available to school districts, and very often what they'll do is they come in and do that. The audit has to happen first of the school building, and then they say, we can do all the retrofits, we can do all this, and we are going to take 40% of your savings for the next decade. They can all be arranged differently, but if they see a potential for savings from the school district or the facility owner, the infrastructure owner, usually is responsible for that full, I think it's level 4 energy audit. I could be correct about that too. But that then takes the burden of doing all those retrofits and installing whatever equipment that leads to efficiency away from the school district. And just add, some school districts are sort of capable of doing much of that themselves. In the same regard, there's been a history, I think the Kenai's Borough School District, they have the capacity to incentivize their maintenance facilities, maintenance departments. So the savings are then kept by the maintenance department and then reinvested in new efficiencies, and that is very often proved quite efficient in this regard. The problem, I think, is that sometimes if they're too good at their job, and when the budget comes out next year, they're sort of, oh, why should we energy to take our this year because you did such a good job and there's less allocation for that game. So it gets a little bit sticky there.
Thank you for that information. Could you repeat the first part again about the name of who is doing this? I remember it wrong. Well, you know, it's been different because it's been several years since I've been on the board when we first made that investment. And then what the district have to do to be involved or not?
I think you may have got it right. I probably got some of the same reports on that project you did, but there are some different companies out there, large ones, like, say, Siemens. They have a contract with the University of Nebraska and Grange, some of their facilities in the last 2 years. So the stumbling block typically is they're very large companies like Siemens that do this, and if the profit is not large enough for them, they're less interested in small brackets. So that sometimes rules out a particular rule left in school building. But that's what Kingdom did, and it's not always infrastructure that they fund. I think in that case, there was a lot of the ways the food was being prepared. You sometimes think of janitorial. There's all sorts of elements to keeping the building in good shape where efficiencies can be found. And it's, in the renewable energy world, clean energy is efficiency first. Once you dig into those efficiencies, they can be in surprising places. And I think Dr. Hirschberg's report mentioned behavior is a huge one.
Thank you.
companies should be able to turn up their buildings for increasing effort to increase its energy efficiency.
Thank you, Mr. Gary. It sounds like there's been a significant amount of work done behind the scenes, at least to the Education Committee, so I really appreciate your attention to this issue. Representative Grunder.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think I grabbed this up last week about I haven't really done a whole lot of them on the list. I was on this trip and I have great stuff. But I can only pick out last year was from the community I got there and I got with the school board member. As I know back, let's say, in the 2012s, they made a determination that they were going to violate the United. And then, so they invested in the United. So they did that, and that's part of the kind of accountability. If there's any superintendent listening, that's part of the accountability that I keep asking for people to understand. We need more money. Well, what have you done to help reduce some of those costs? And then we'll ask the DOA, say, okay, we're going to dump $125,000 into this lighting, knowing that as every year passes, and we're saving money. So that would really like to know that. And we looked at the energy chart from fiscal year 19, and it says school energy costs. And my question is that combining the fuel oil that they buy and electricity? So that's what's called energy costs, both of those. And do we know what the price of, let's just say, the average price of oil was in fiscal year? And I'm just trying to get an idea, was it $100 a barrel in fiscal year 19, or was it $50 a barrel? I think that's my real question, is do we know what the price of oil was in fiscal year 19? Thank you.
Actually, as part of your referral to the big chart, this is part of the text, page 11 of the report, discharging of progress, right? Okay. And the question was for Dr. Hirschberg or Ms. O'Connell. Mr. Gray, where we have some recording of the building.
So, President Chair, this is Diane Hirschberg, and yes, these were costs for not split out by electricity and heat, and I do not have the oil cost for that year, so it's easy enough to go back and find the general cost of oil, then you've got those negotiated contracts with each district, and that would be, I know districts have it, the school business officers probably could come up with that information fairly quickly. But one point I was also going to make to your comment about is that Alaska Gateway is that Alaska Gateway is one of the districts that has the most heat in three buildings that were traceable to waste.
I see Mr. McConnell's hand is up. Go ahead, Mr. McConnell.
Thank you, Colin. I'm sorry. Just in reference to Representative Cook's comments there, I see that there are a lot of other factors going on too, including, you know, energy, heat, and electricity. So depending on the efficiency of the local utility, that cost is affected too. So, you know, that goes to the wider issue of PCE efficiency, the remoteness of the maintenance, the things like the school building and in the powerhouse. You may have deferred maintenance. That is, you know, you don't have the money to take care of this little problem. And so there's going to be a constant increase in energy costs per square foot. And then there's success stories on the other side where a lot of school districts are partnering with the utility for, say, waste heat. So heat coming from the powerhouse is then used to heat, say, the engine room or the mechanical room inside the school. And, you know, a lot of savings are affected there. So that chart is hard to read as just a fuel stop.
Thank you. Appreciate that. Representative Parker, I know that those LED fixtures
are quite extensive to install, but the savings in the long run is tremendous. So they're definitely worth the upfront cost.
Thank you, Andrew. Yeah, and I know our maintenance group in the homeowners institution will not have any plans, but it was just a step forward in the district. Maybe it was good. Actually, that's what we're going to do. We're not adding another one, but that is, taking, being a proctor of the maintenance service and money, and that's not what happened when we had to move to take care of our own enough to just step out of the box and create more business. It's just kind of trying to get me more money for this.
Each community that the total cost equalization formula is, it's some people call it a subsidy, some say it's not, but it's based on non-fuel costs. So that goes to the efficiency of the powerhouse itself, so how many kilowatt hours you're getting for cost of fuel. So that formula determines how much an entire village is paying. Does affect no matter what the school is getting. So you can have a way more efficient school, you can have one of the best facility staffs going, but if you're in a region where you just are paying a higher kilowatt hour rate, your costs are definitely going to be higher. Not sure if that answers your question, but there's not a one-on-one match of how much we're spending versus how efficient that really is.
Thank you for that. I'm having a hard time tying the impact of PCE to the school, since it's my understanding that PCE is to lower the cost for individuals and families, not community buildings like schools and, city offices and so on and so forth. Can you?
That is my mistake. You're correct. Community building is not getting the kilowatt hour there. So I sometimes look at the broad village picture, but you're correct right there.
So I sort of have a rhetorical question. It has occurred to me that there are tens of thousands of Alaskans benefiting from the lower costs through the Power Cost Equalization Fund, but how can schools and other community facilities benefit from that other than efficiencies in the powerhouse, which then extend to all facilities in the community, not just homes of residents? And has that ever been a topic of discussion? How can PCE help all of our communities in every building in the community and not just families and individuals?
I may not be qualified to answer that, but I would say that it certainly goes to a quality of life issue. So if the Washington is a community building, if the school is building, and the community is using those facilities, each resident itself is saving money, they have more money, it improves the quality of life that they can sort of spend that money elsewhere. I'm not sure what the exact question is. Was there, except for that PCE improves quality of life, which then spills over to the larger community.
That's true, but the Washington area and the school and the city offices are paying the higher electricity rates that are not reduced by the PCE subsidy. I'm just having a hard time understanding why can't we, and I think that's a question for the legislature, why can't we apply the PCE savings to community facilities as well, specifically schools?
I hesitate to do it, it's not my area of expertise, but
community building is not into the PCE formula, so that affects the rate. It's the residential rate is for the first 500 kilowatt hours, they get that reduced rate, but the community billings are counted in there in that formula. Diane, I don't know if you can help me out a little more than the density for the PCE formula.
So this is Diane Rushmore. I am from the expert on the PCE formula, but I do not know it. So there was a report that was done recently. I believe Mayor Kohler and Ron Holtman, because both of them are involved in this conversation, and there's definitely in communities PCE, making sure that PCE is not going to disappear is a concern, because in some places there's real concern that modifications to PCE will mean higher energy costs for individuals who are at this point, quite often on the edge, where energy costs can put them over not being able to eat, for example. And so I think it is a really important conversation about energy costs and efficiency as a whole. And for that, I would highly recommend talking with Ron Holtman from the Alaska Center for Energy and Power, seeing if Mayor Kohler would come in and some of these others. I know there's a relationship that is being discussed. For example, Galena is one of the places with biogas, and are working on solar in partnership with the town and the city. And I think this, our inability to give you a clear answer is a reflection of the larger complexity that schools are within communities and within districts. And so when I think about the example of Arctic Village is really interested in building solar capacity, working actively on that, and that hopefully would affect the school's individual costs, but how that is going to play out for the district as a whole, when Manatee may not have, because Manatee is a much older school building, and I can tell you, when I slept in that building, that it is simultaneously overheated and frozen, because it is a building that just has, is way past its due date to be replaced. And so, district costs are going to be somewhat, but probably not hugely impacted by Arctic, with a variety of medical schools' ability to then move some of its electricity and solar. And so I do think this is it's a very complex question. A lot of communities are involved with a number of really great initiatives out there. ASAP and I started working with communities through something called ETIP, which is a National Renewable Energy Lab initiative to try to build energy efficiency in these island and remote communities. But to some extent, they're peaceful. To some extent, they depend on the community having somebody with the bandwidth to actually write the proposal and make the grant. And in so many places, in our village, the same person that's helping manage the energy grant is also one of the maintenance people in the school district, is also the counselor also. So when they're doing that much as one person, how do we scaffold them to be able to have the bandwidth to get that additional funding and do that additional work to build more efficiency? I'm not sure, other than we're trying to use grant funding that we have in the case of Arctic Village to support their work.
Sure, I'm sorry if I may. Just to clarify, that's Chris McCall, who was right. Just to clarify a comment I made, it's state and federal facilities that are being community, centers within the community are not eligible for PCE. Things like wash areas, lift stations, the water sewage that even broader stations, those are cultural engagement. So there's not the station that state and federal entities within the community are not eligible for PCA, but that doesn't exclude other community members.
Manufacturing it would be cheaper
electricity that improves, again, quality of life issues, or the bottom line is the energy.
Yeah, thank you, Dr. Dillon. I guess I'd like to hear from Mr. Merritt and from Mr. Stewart and Mr. McConnell about how would you advise this committee next steps they could take next information to gather any recommendations you would have for this operation. Earlier, the fact school cost differential was operated. Can you give us a little more detail on that? Because I know that's an issue with many school districts, the overall school cost differential and energy costs figure right into that. When was that updated, I should say, and roughly that's the place where we need to request that the district cost differential be studied or be tracked within 15 years, am I correct?
Yes, standards, right, and general cost differential was studied in the report was released in 2004, 2005, and then the findings were implemented slowly. There was a 5-year transition to the updated geographic cost differential. So frankly, it was outdated. To let you know, we have been asked by a couple of different legislative offices to even estimate the cost. So I think somebody will be seeing a proposal. To work to have an update there. But the issue with energy will always be very tricky because it is so volatile that if you go through all the calculations to figure out the geographic cost differential and then the drought hits in Southeast can't use hydro or the Hudson River ice comes and wipes out several of the storage tanks all of a sudden those energy costs are changing after we calculated the geographic cost differential that includes energy. So it's going to be an ongoing challenge. I think for us, one of the things to do is to try to figure out a way that index can be updated more easily. Regularly, but there's also a question of whether energy should be taken out of that and then addressed as a separate issue for communities with incentives. And I really appreciate Representative Clark talking about the incentives for more efficiency. They all benefit in the end if school districts and communities have more efficient buildings and more access to renewable energy or other ways to reduce energy costs for everybody, district and residents. So this is a really tough decision you all have to make about what's the right balance in incentivizing and investing in those things. I really appreciate the Department of Education really trying to figure out ways to help districts look at retrofitting, and hopefully looking at some of those old buildings that, like I said, they are past their lifespan. But I also think the conversation that you talked about with AEA and others having community and schools together are probably going to make it an easier goal. I look at Kalina and the way the conversation happens collaboratively between the school district and the city and the tribe, and I think that's how you have a conversation about energy use to make things more efficient. And in the long run, so it's not just your committee, it is the legislature as a whole trying to work toward this. But we hope we will hear this geographic cost differential work over the next year.
Question coming from me. Thank you, gentlemen. Just addressing your own statement about next steps. I, in this particular area, have learned a ton from each school district's facility manager or facility director, and what falls on the comments by Mr. Warren had made that these individuals have, wear 10 different hats. One of them is watching that energy, and so locations you read in each school district, in each particular building, but anecdotally, it's my experience that they're putting out fires. They're doing sort of remote troubleshooting. They might have to put two of their district guys on an airplane that gets weathered in to go work on a boiler that's beyond the capacity of the person on the site. So all of those costs, you know, get actually a high cost of energy. And so, but putting in LEDs, I'm sure that if you follow each of these facility maintenance guys, they probably could, you know, rattle off a lot of the improvements in each school building that they made. But typically, it's dealing with deferred maintenance or trying to bring the funds for preventative maintenance is what occupies most of their time, is battling inefficiencies of those funds. In this area, I always use that overuse, but most of the time, that every happy family is alike, whereas every unhappy family is unhappy in its own way. And that's sort of the plight of the facility. Make sure it's just putting out fires in that regard. So I guess related, but next steps is any of those folks that are direct to the school district meetings will work on an open and will tell you the challenges to their particular job.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Yeah, I'm pretty well versed in what goes on about the FSUB and the Chiefs and a school board member. No matter what the costs are, as a regional school board member, I still need to know what those costs are going. And if this is a state thing, and I'm sitting here, you know, and allocating our funds for the legislature, and all it is what is that concern? I get that you have to run through some others and stuff. I'm not asking for that kind of stuff. I'm being asked for those solid answers of what we've done. I can guarantee you have to call after you make that. They would do that, but I don't think that you have to call them. If you're going to come here and ask me for money, remind me of what you have done so I have this money. And that's all I'm asking for. That's the accountability part of the meeting. So, again, I would love to see what every school district has done. I've worked out in the area, kind of organized some schools and some stuff out there. So it would just be really, it would be really beneficial for the school district to be able to provide money to the library. So I haven't thought of how many of them. They've done good things with their money. They've done really good things with their money to make their schools more efficient. I think that goes along with the bigger.
I have some. Thank you. I think that one of the entities that are giving us that information about things would be that Glasgow school business officials, because I think they always oversee the budgets in their individual districts, and to me that would be a lot more efficient than what they have to do it, because that would be a lot of funding in there. So, it sounds like there's a lot of communication, but that might be something we can ask a lot of school if they could provide, because they probably would have that. So I think we can follow up on that, because it is good to know what has been happening. And I think the public likes knowing more about the efficiency trying to help in times. There's the dark and the ending in that. Talk about some of the successes that they are doing. So thank you for the work the individual school districts business officials should be the turning point for that information. That's where that information should come from.
I love that that might be followed up soon. I know that a lot of the foundations of school boards in their annual December meeting has been bringing all the maintenance staff who can into anchorage, and maybe they would have kind of professional development and this time to collaborate on what's happening and maybe want them to hear from information to reach out to
just to play the other side of that, if they provided a list of all the extreme costs of things like that, and their fiscal deals with this government, that way we have a regional leadership to not just spend $400,000 in these schools on rebuilding the boilers. I mean, those are valuable things that I like to see. So, I mean, so Yeah, I would love to see the positive things about our phone. It's really great. High cost that are involved in the schools also. I mean, I think this is a really cool thing. I think once we see that, we have a better understanding. So that's what I understand working for, just a better understanding. Now, let me expand a little more about the work that led to get these completed.
We're going to be seeing a list of the priority general projects. We were talking about the capital budget here. But Mr. Barrett, can you provide those capital projects that are contained in our priority? Because I know that our finance officials mayors and our houses are discussing funding those school district priority projects. That's kind of beyond the reach of this particular committee, but we will be talking about it in the coming weeks as we look at the capital budget for the state.
We're going to have to look at it.
Thank you. Appreciate that. Representative Gillum.
Yeah. If it comes around, I'm actually trying to question the people are retired. I think this is a conversation, the beginning of a conversation we need to have. But we're asking for the accountability. So, asking the board, this school district is settled, where we're spending money, they're asking the board. I don't think that there is, similar thing. I think this is the beginning of a conversation that we need to have. This needs to be a formal conversation. We need everybody involved. Thank you.
This is an ongoing, recruiting to have the school department and the school districts, and we just have to know. We're asked the question, we're going to pull the information from it. I think this list will be played out with us within our conversation. All right. Okay, any further questions from the committee? Any thoughts or comments from any of the speakers? Mr. O'Donnell, your team's button is blinking.
Apologies.
It's an error. Okay. Anyone wish to make a closing comment? All right. Seeing that you're going to say, Mr. Ray.
Yes, those are comments that have been great online. Before the committee, this meeting is adjourned at 9:36 p.m. Thank you.